The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Patrick Gagan is with me, director of the Trinity Long Room Hub and, of course, presenter of Talking History here on News Talk, continuing our presidential series. So if you have missed it or you've been away on holidays for the last couple of weeks, Patrick kicked things off with an account of the ugliest races, the ugliest presidential races in Irish history. And then last week we talked about the role, the genesis and the evolution of the role. And you can listen back to those. They're available as standalone episodes. They're up as podcasts on the News Talk app. This week, Patrick, we are talking about crises and controversies. Is that right?
That's right. And the biggest crisis of them all, when a president was forced to resign from office.
Okay, we'll kick things off there. So I'd wager lots of people listening don't really know an awful lot about this story.
No, they might be familiar with the phrase a thundering disgrace.
Yes, and that was even use the phrase without realising where it comes from.
And that was the phrase uttered by Paddy Donegan, the Fine Gael Minister for Defence, about the President Carúla Dálaigh. Now, some accounts say that perhaps he used stronger language, various debates, but some of the journalists who were present say that it was thundering disgrace. But it really brought the presidency into crisis, because it wasn't appropriate language. Donegan offered to resign, but that wasn't accepted by the Taoiseach. And he really put the president in a very difficult position. And this was a remarkable person who was the president, Carúla Dálaigh. He had been an attorney general. He had been elevated to the Supreme Court and had become Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. And then he had resigned as Chief Justice to become the first Irish judge on the European Court of Justice. So he was considered our greatest lawmaker and judge. And in 1974, when the President Erskine Childers died in office, none of the parties wanted an election, because there had been a presidential election the year before, there had been a general election, none of the parties had any money. So Fine Gael agreed with Fianna Fáil that if O'Dálaigh was put forward as an agreed candidate, they wouldn't run anyone else. So O'Dálaigh became a president by acclaim without an election. But relations were strained with the Fine Gael Labour government, and the summer and autumn of 1976 was particularly heated because there was so much going on. The British ambassador to Ireland, Christopher Ewart Biggs, he was assassinated in Dublin. He was blown up by a landmine that exploded, killing him and the other occupants of his car in July of 1976. And the government, you know, shocked by that and all of the troubles that and everything that was going on in the island, brought in an Emergency Powers Act, and that allowed for internment of people. They could be detained from 2 to now 7 days without being charged by the Gardaí. And what the president did, as is his constitutional right, he, after consulting with his Council of State, decided to test the constitutionality of that provision.
Yes, which is pretty uncontroversial.
Pretty uncontroversial that this was, and the Supreme Court decided that it was constitutional, and therefore that was really part of the checks and balances in our constitution, and it seemed like a perfectly healthy and appropriate thing to do. But I think the government thought this was an attack on them, that maybe the president was standing in the way of their defence of the state against these terrorists who had killed the British ambassador and were committing all of these atrocities. And to make that comment at an army event in a barracks in Mullingar, County Westmeath, was disgraceful, because the president, as we've talked about before, is the commander in chief of the forces. So it was particularly pointed, and I think the controversy could have been avoided if the Taoiseach Liam Cosgrave had accepted the resignation, but he didn't.
Of
Donegan.
Oh, so Donegan, after he stood up and said O'Dálaigh's a thundering disgrace, he offered to resign.
Later, there was a huge controversy. You know, there were rumours that he was drunk when he had been speaking. He denied it, but made this claim that he was like a zombie because he had been concussed from a car accident the night before, which sounds a bit like special pleading. Claimed that he was emotional and distressed by the recent murder of a guard by the IRA. But in any case, he offered to resign. it should have been accepted and that would have been the end of it. But instead, the Taoiseach refused to accept it and instead kind of stood over the comments in the Dáil, saying that perhaps the choice of language was incorrect, but the point he was making was the right one. And I don't think that was appropriate either. So right. I think it was Donegan who was the thundering disgrace in 1976. And I think the government has a large degree of blame as well in not dismissing Donegan for the comments. And so a few days later, Carola Dolig resigned. And I think that was a very sad way of ending a very distinguished legal and political career.
And he resigned because relations had broken down, because the controversy was continuing. He thought it was kind of taking attention away from matters that were more important. Now, what was his rationale for resignation?
Well, I don't think you can have a government minister call the president a thundering disgrace and stay in office. You know, something has to go there, especially when the president had been acting within his constitutional functions, and the fact then that the army had been brought into it, and that was damaging his role as the
I guess when Cosgrave backed up Donegan, it was almost a vote of no confidence in O'Dolig, wasn't it, from the Taoiseach.
And, you know, relations between the government and the president had been strained from the very beginning. The president didn't really feel he was consulted on matters of state. So the tensions were there from the beginning. You know, I think O'Dolig was perhaps seen, because he'd been an attorney general in a Fianna Fáil government, that he was seen as a Fianna Fáiler. But the comments were inappropriate. They were disgraceful. They should have been disavowed and disowned. The minister should have resigned. Instead, the minister carried on, was subsequently demoted and was moved to a lower ministry. But it was seen as a factor in Fine Gael being kicked out of power in 1977. And I think it cast a big shadow over things. And I think it was a crisis that could have been avoided. But the president was not to blame. It was a minister who was shooting his mouth off, sounding tough, but actually bringing his own office and that of the presidency into controversy.
So that's undoubtedly the biggest kind of crisis and controversy in presidential history. But plenty of other presidents have kind of dipped their toe in the waters of controversy. We might talk about a few more recent examples. We'll talk about the two Marys. So Mary McAleese, first of all, and the religious schism she brought about.
You know, some of the Mary McAleese ones, you know, just, you know, strikes
It's remarkable that they're as recent as they are, actually.
Yes. As recent as they are and still seem as distant that they should be from a century ago. Mary McAleese, shortly after becoming president in December 1997, she went to a Church of Ireland cathedral and she took communion. And that was criticised by a number of Catholic bishops. And Cardinal Desmond O'Connell called her actions a deception and a sham. And given that he was someone who subsequently was criticised very heavily for being involved in various deceptions and shams, for him to intervene like that. But there was an opinion poll taken and 78% of the Irish people backed Mary McAleese. And I think that was a real sign that Ireland in 1997 wasn't the same old Ireland that they were expecting.
And the same old Ireland people abroad thought we were, because Bernard Law in Boston, the Cardinal, had really strong words for Mary McAleese.
Now, Mary McAleese only made this public in later years. I think in 2012 she talked about it. So it was a private clash before then. But in 1998, she met Cardinal Bernard Law of Boston on an official visit to the United States. She was with a government minister, and he told her that he was sorry for Catholic Ireland to have you as a president. And President
all of these people.
Well, Mary McAleese said afterwards that she felt that he had insulted Ireland and the Irish people, and she was right. And well, she, you know, quite brilliantly, Mary McAleese said that she told him that she was the president of Ireland. She wasn't just the president of Catholic Ireland. And Cardinal Law, if you watch the movie Spotlight about the exposure of the church cover-up of sex abuse, he's a figure in that. He was forced to resign in 2002. someone also involved in deceit and huge scale cover-ups. And for him to say something like that to one of our greatest presidents, but fair play to Mary McAleese, who every time I read about these stories, she rises higher and higher in my estimation. You know, she stood up for Ireland, she stood up for the new Ireland, and she put Cardinal Law in his place.
And Mary Robinson as well. So this was a story I hadn't been familiar with. This is amazing. Tell us about the BBC, the Dimbleby lecture.
Well, again, shortly after being elected president, Mary Robinson was invited to give the very prestigious BBC Dimbleby lecture. This was in 1991, and she decided she would speak about women and the family in Ireland. But to record this lecture, she would have to leave the state. And for a president to leave the state, they have to receive permission from the government. So she applied for permission, and the Taoiseach of the day, Charles Haughey, just refused.
Just said no, he didn't want her doing it.
He didn't want her doing it because he thought that, well, she's going to talk about Ireland's, you know, poor history when it comes to women and children and the family. It's going to, you know, draw attention to our shameful past. So he just decided, well, I can't block you doing the lecture, but I can block you leaving the country. And he exerted the constitutional prerogative of the government and blocked her leaving.
And then a couple of years later, again, Mary Robinson, she met Queen Elizabeth, the late Queen Elizabeth, and Gerry Adams. And there was a bit of controversy around this.
And this was the same summer. So she met Queen Elizabeth II at one event. She shook hands with the Queen. Some people didn't like that, but by and large, that was okay. But later on, she met Gerry Adams. And she shook his hand. And that was hugely controversial. Mm. And even Dick Spring, who was the Minister for Foreign Affairs and the Labour Party leader, the person who had chosen Mary Robinson to run for the presidency, he had advised her not to meet with Gerry Adams. But she thought it was important in terms of the emerging peace process. It was important in terms of, you know, building these bridges and opening these links and conversations. And I think it showed real courage. And I think it was something that helped propel the peace process forward.
And again, in a story from another age, she was criticised when she met the Pope, John Paul II, for her outfit. Wasn't becoming.
A young Irish priest accused her of having breached dress codes. But then someone else pointed out that actually under Pope John Paul II, the dress codes had changed and relaxed. And I think Mary McAleese might have gone in trouble as well for not wearing something on her head. Like some of these really archaic things where, and I think there is a huge amount of sexism in these things because I don't think they would have any issue if a male president was wearing a three-piece suit or his tie was undone or there was some issue like that. But they seem to have a real issue when it's a woman president going, and then they seem to be monitoring everything.
Sean T. O'Kelly as well, kind of a bit of controversy around the Pope and the Vatican. But sorry, before that though, just one final point to Mary Robinson, because I think this is something that some people might have forgotten. Younger listeners, I would wager the overwhelming majority of them would not realise this. Mary Robinson didn't serve a full term as president.
No, she was offered a very prestigious and important job to become the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. And she accepted and she went on and did an absolutely brilliant job in that role. But the term was starting just as her presidency was coming to an end. And so she resigned a little bit early. The Council of State kind of acted in her place for the few remaining weeks. But in fairness to Mary Robinson, she always regretted that afterwards.
Was it controversial at the time?
I remember it being criticised. And I remember it kind of leaving a bit of a bad taste that I don't think people really like the idea that you're looking at the next job when you're president of Ireland, that we kind of think that you're the head of the state. That's the most important role. There's no bigger job and you see out your term and you certainly don't leave it early to accept another job. And Mary Robinson did accept that. So I think it was only for a few weeks. I think it was something she regretted. I think she probably didn't realise that there was a symbolism attached to it.
Yeah.
So I would recognise that the great thing she did as president and as opening up the office outweighs you know, the circumstances of her leaving.
And as you say, she was such a success, if that's the right way to describe it, in that role ultimately. It probably then in hindsight it had that controversy kind of
in hindsight. Yeah. And the fact that she just did the one term and, you know, went on to other things. But then we went on to Mary McAleese and the two terms and it just went from strength to strength.
So then before I let you go, what did Sean T. O'Kelly say in the Vatican?
Well, Well, I love Sean T. O'Kelly because I think he was one of the shortest presidents, and there was always a huge mirth whenever he was at a sporting event when they saw how small he was. But when Ireland became a republic, he insisted that the first state he wanted to visit was the Vatican because he was a devout Catholic and he wanted to...
This is like all these prospective mayors of New York, and they all say, where would you first visit? And they all say Israel. So this is the Irish version in the 1940s was the Vatican.
And so he met with Pope Pius XII and they had a private chat. But afterwards, when a journalist just asked some innocuous question about what they were chatting about, he said, oh, we were just chatting about communism and, you know, how the Pope hates it and, you know, his criticisms of all of this. But that created controversy then for the Pope with Stalin, because Stalin was unhappy that the Pope was there bad-mouthing communism and causing some pressure there. So the president, Sean T. O'Kelly, learned then perhaps that he should be a bit more careful with his words. But I was reading Patrick Maugham's wonderful entry on Sean T. O'Kelly in the Dictionary of Irish Biography, and these are all available free of charge online, dib.ie. But he comments that his excessive fondness for whiskey at the time was widely known but not subjected to public comment.
Well, wouldn't be the case today. dib.ie is the website of the Dictionary of Irish Biography, if you were wondering Patrick mentioned, if you want to have a look at it. And like I say, our previous two episodes of this series are available as podcasts. We'll get this up online. And Patrick Egan of Talking History will be back with me at the same time next week. Patrick, thanks a million.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.